the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net. Any station wishing to make an emergency or priority call at this time before we get the net rolling, please call now, KGBAR. Okie doke. This is your host, Gordon, W2TTT. The purpose of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net is to provide an opportunity space for any question on any topic of interest to any amateur, within reasonable limits, of course, of propriety, in our wonderful hobby of amateur radio. There is no such thing as too hard a question. There's no such thing as too simple a question. Everything has value. I'm sure we all can learn something, even if it's nothing else more than how to explain a topic to somebody else in a manner that which works for them, which we may not have known before. Past subjects have run the gamut from very complex, cutting-edge technology within amateur radio and within the field of electronics to basic things like how do I put up a dipole. So, as I say, there's nothing beyond the realm of reasonability for this net. When you check in, we would ask that you give your name, your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment. And we'd like stations to check in. One of the nice things about going to the recent Hamfest, I have heard many stations who check in, who don't check in, who've never checked in, who tell me they listened to the net and were even intrigued by the conversation, even cited the conversation. So we welcome anybody just adding their two cents and just let us know they're out there. So on that note, please come with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. This is K2BAR.
KC2AWX, Vance Harvey in beautiful Fairlawn, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. Harvey, do you have a question or comment?
For discussion, open for discussion tonight. Name is Paul, QTH Westwood, New Jersey, Bergen County.
Okay, I have Harvey and I have Paul. What's Paul's call?
This is November, Zulu, number 2, Kilo, NZ2K.
Hello, Paul. Hi, Paul. Okay, very good. I have Harvey and Paul. Any other station is called K2BAR. No other stations at this time. This is K2BAR looking for check-ins for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net. Please call K2BAR.
This is NS2K Jim, and I don't have a question at this point.
NS2K acknowledged. No problem, Jim. Anybody else? This is K2BAR. That's a good start. Harvey, did you have a question that wasn't quite clear?
Yes, I do. I took the cover off of that AZ-100 auto-tuner, and I was amazed at a beautiful layout. Everything is nice and neat and clean. I wanted to insert the new ICs that I received. Something. I don't have a tool to remove those ICs or insert the new ones. Can you help me out on that problem, Mr. Gordon?
Well, yeah, I can give you a couple of ideas. If you have an eddy-static surface and you are grounded, those take either a grounding strap around your wrist, or if it's designed for that purpose, or even just a piece of a braid around your wrist is fine, to a known ground. You can take a screwdriver and gently pry up the IC, noting which end is the key end, where pin one is, and by going back and forth between the two ends, you can gently teeter-totter the IC out of the socket. Then, before putting the new IC in the same socket, you take the IC and you lay it horizontally on, again, the eddy static surface of a desk. and gently fold the pins in so that they're parallel and perpendicular to the socket, PC board surface once you shove them in the socket. And you can make sure the alignment of the pins is reasonable by comparing it to the separation of the pins, the two rows of pins between the IC you just pulled out and the one you're about to insert. Does that answer your question, Harvey?
That's the way the Arabs would do it. No. There is a regular tool to pull those ICs out and to insert them. That's what I need. Because there isn't any tolerance between the IC and the plug that it fits in. And there's no space and no way to stick a thin knife or screwdriver in there to pry it up. So that's a problem.
NS2K. The question is it a dual inline IC, that is two rows of pins sticking basically down from the IC, or is it some other style of IC in a socket?
It is a dip.
Okay, well then I've had pretty good luck with the screwdriver. Usually there's a way. I'm trying to think, I might even have a tool, but I'm not sure where it is.
Well, thank you. I might just have to go to Radio Shack and purchase one. All right, thank you. And I have a suggestion, Mr. Gordon. How about on 10 meters have, a 5-minute tech net? KC2AWX back to net control.
I think that would be marvelous. I think you need to ask Jim to do that.
Good evening.
I think it would be really good because I think we get different audience to some degree. Okay, Paul, did you have a question?
Yeah, it's just a general question in antennas here. I've heard some discussion on this net from time to time, and I don't really get too much of a chance to get in here and chat. From time to time talking about antennas, some end-fed antennas, and some actually there was a discussion of an antenna using feed line and actually calculating using the velocity factor and seeing that the physical wavelength to resonate the antenna changes. But I was up at Field Day in Wayne, and we were changing out a couple pieces of feed line on a antenna. My question's not so much directed at the antenna, but I want to know why people are so caught up and tripped up in velocity factors of feed line when you're working at low frequencies. We all read books and things like that on microwave and UHF frequencies, and you know where that could come into play. But why such a big push to have a higher velocity factor? Well, let's just say on a regular piece of feed line, coax, something like RG8X or something like that. Is there really that much difference having a velocity set factor of 0.67 versus 0.82? Just throwing that out for a question. I'm not looking for any other thing more than just why the higher the number, the better, even when you're working at HF frequencies. I can't seem to see why it would really matter.
It's a very good question. We were talking about it in context of bazookas a few weeks ago. That may be the conversation you might have heard. I'm going to defer to Jim because I'm not sure if a lower velocity factor is necessarily bad. As long as it's accounted for, I would think that it wouldn't matter, again, as long as it's accounted for, because what you want is the input impedance to match the output impedance of the transmission line at a given frequency. And so I would think that that would be useful to know. But I can't imagine, and it may be my ignorance, as to why a lower velocity factor is less desirable in any case than a higher one. That stumps me a bit. Jim, can I defer to you?
Oops, I missed the question, but, and that's okay. Yeah, I've been running around delivering batteries and just bought a 27 deep cycle size 27 battery for a friend of mine, and anyway, it's going to be his refrigeration battery. In any case, in coax, the higher velocity factor wire tends to be a foamed dielectric, or at least partial air dielectric. And so it's generally lower loss at high frequencies. It also means that it's not as tough. It can't withstand anywhere near as much abuse. But while the velocity factor in itself is not that important, although it's sometimes, well, very important to be known, it's usually only an indicator that it's a lower loss cable.
Okay. So velocity factor is a potential indicator of lower loss. I think that's your point.
Oh, absolutely. You need to look up the cable to find out what the loss per 100 feet at some particular frequency, or, you know, what that is, and use that as your comparison mark.
Okay, very good. Paul?
Okay, that kind of answers my question a little bit. And you brought up a good point too, Gordon, for anybody listening. You were talking about matching input impedance and output impedance, and like being using the transmission line. I guess with different velocity factors, that would be true also. I might be out of bounds saying this, I'm not sure, but I imagine there would be a difference in the length of coax to match, let's say you're given a certain frequency, 14.1 megahertz, and if you use two pieces of coax, one has a higher velocity factor than another one, the lengths of them might be slightly different to accomplish that matching of the impedances on both ends of it. I think that makes sense, and you said something about that, and I understand that, and I did learn something here. That's good. Thank you. And the 2K. I think that answers my question, too.
Caller. We have another caller. Go ahead. No problem, Paul. Who's the call?
Hello, Charlie to Quebec Yankee Mike. Good evening, gentlemen. Gordon. Jim. I had a question, and I'll wait in my turn.
Very good, Pete. All right. Well, okay. So, but the essential question, Paul, was, why is velocity factor so important to consider in HF installations? And I think we gave you two reasons why it's important, period. Again, one is the length of the coax will be different, and the other is it's a potential indicator of loss. Anything else we can help you with? Anybody else have any, first you, Paul, and anybody else who would like to make any further comments on the subject before we move on? Okay, then I think we're going to call it square there. Very good. Wow, two important questions. I want to come back to Harvey just real quickly with another thing, and just to echo what Jim said. You know, perhaps I think that the IC can be pulled given the right patience and the right set of screwdrivers, you can get the puppy out and new ones in. Just as well. I actually have seen where those two ICs go, and the main PC board, I don't see a reason why not, and the front board, it's just a weird angle, but it can be done as well. By the way, just for reference, Harvey, you must replace both simultaneously, just for your reference, on that tuner. He has an LDG AT100 Pro, as do I, and he's doing an EEPROM upgrade. So anyway, Harvey, any more on that one?
No, I think I got the idea. I think I have
a kit from Radio Shack that I purchased a few years ago. I have to go in the basement and rummage through all the boxes, but I might have something that will take it out, take the ICs out, and insert them. And yeah, I was thinking about using some braided wire and hooking it to a ground so I won't have any static electricity built up on my body, because if it gets too high, you could actually hear a snap in the IC and it fries everything inside. So that's a good idea to ground yourself. All right, thank you very much, gentlemen. KC2AWX back to K2BAR.
Okay, very good. KC2AWX, K2BAR. All righty, well, we try to help with little add-ons, as it were. Peter, your question in a moment, so get yourself all poised. At this time, I'm looking for other check-ins to the net. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. You need not be a member to check in with a question, no matter how simple or complex, seemingly foolish or seemingly erudite. All questions are welcome, as long as they're done in good taste. Please call K2BAR with your call, your name, and your question.
W2AKR, repeater.
K2BAR, this is N3CRT, Charlie. Hi, Gordon and everybody, just checking in to say hello. I don't really have any questions, just listening.
Okay, Charlie, very fine. Are we leaving Dumont again?
I was just over in Caldwell. They had a nice concert on the park there that we were listening to some music.
Oh, very fine. Okay, very fine. Well, nice of you to join us. If a question occurs to you, feel free to chime in. KC2QIM, it is your turn, sir. Your question.
Thank you, Gordon. K2BAR, KC2QIM. The question really is about my Kenwood TS440. I've been experiencing some unusual things with this radio. One of the things is I turn it on, and the radio goes on, and all of a sudden it goes from the display, which is an LED, or actually it's a tube display, goes from frequency to the dots. Now, I've done some research on the internet, and this dot thing is a sort of a notorious thing about some kind of epoxy or something that sort of melts or drips away and creates a short in the PLL circuit or something like that. But what I get is basically that the frequency flashes on and the dots flash back, and then the dots flash back and the frequency goes on, and then the radio starts to drift. So if you're on frequency with a sideband station, the VFO drifts. Even though the frequency stays where it is, you know that the receiver is drifting. And after a while, and I turn the radio on, turn the radio off, after a while it stabilizes. And I'm just thinking, I turned the radio on tonight, I was on 20 meters, made some contacts up in Canada, no problem, but I think that the room upstairs was a little cooler today, and I'm just wondering if the temperature may have an effect, and if anybody has any experience with the Kenwood TS440 with this similar or same kind of problem. Over.
Well, I have not seen this, but that's a really interesting question. So, my question to that would be, does anybody else know? This is K2BAR.
K2BAR, N3CRT. Yeah, I also have a TS440, and I've never had the dots problem, but online, if you go to Yahoo Groups, and you look up, it's called TS-440. There are plenty of good ham groups on Yahoo Groups, and in their file section they have pictures and very good descriptions of how to take the unit apart and get that epoxy glue out of there, and it is the PLL unlock problem, and it's quite common.
Thank you, Charlie. Now, does that have an effect on the receiver? Because NPLM is also being the transmitter. What I also found is when the dots were flashing on and off and I went to transmit, just to be able to tune up, you know, on a low power thing, I was, even though the transmit light went on, I got no power out. I mean, it was that flaky.
Yeah, from what I hear, it's like the oscillator is not oscillating. It's unlocked. It's not operating, so I don't think you would get any power out. But from what I hear, it's pretty easy to do. You might want to check it out there on Yahoo. N3CRT.
Okay, N3CRT, KC2QIM. Name is Peter. Thank you very much, Charlie, for that tidbit. I am going to do more research on the internet on this, but it was very scary because I thought, gee whiz, this beautiful rig that has all these nice features from the 20 years ago is starting to give me grief already. And it wasn't an RF issue or anything like that. It was just this thing that I knew was something that was this epoxy stuff, the dot problem, which is the notorious problem, but it seemed to manifest itself in different ways in the Kenwood. But thank you very much. If anybody else has any other experience with that, I'd be appreciative to hear it. If not, I'll be on a standby and listen. This is KC2QIM.
Comment.
Jim?
Yeah, while I have not had this specific problem or with a specific type of equipment, it's very similar to a problem that we had years ago in our Sony videotape machines from the same time era, but there was a sealant that they used. In this case, it was to glue the fish paper to the bottom of the circuit board inside some little metal cans that had filters in them, and in some cases the impedance of the filter circuit was quite high, so it was susceptible to leakage current, and after a while the glue would turn color, get brittle, and become conductive at the same time, which really upset the circuit. The other thing, the reason why it would not transmit is that it sounds like the PLL is unlocked, and there's probably an inhibit circuit that would stop the transmitter from operating if the PLL is not happy. NS2K.
Hey, Peter.
I guess so. Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you very much. That explains a lot of it. It was sort of scary. The thing is, it's intermittent. I mean, tonight I turned the radio on, no problem. Was on for about a half an hour to 45 minutes. Had a couple of QSOs and shut it down. It was behaving itself.
Anybody want to take that one? Jim?
I think Jim gave me a good explanation as well, and so did Charlie. So I'm sort of happy with the input. I thank you guys very much, and I'll be on the standby listening, KC2QIM.
Okay. Well, we had three diverse topics so far tonight, and five, six of us are checked in, which is the net norm, by the way. Oh, dear. Just as a little bit of advertising, we were happy to be approached by people about the TechNet at the Sussex Hamfest. Now, some of the people, or most of the people who approached me about the TechNet don't live, well, actually most live in our coverage area, but have never checked in. Never. All have never checked in. 10 different people have mentioned to me, and nobody had ever checked in among the 10. It's fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating. Anyway, I hope there are more questions out there. At this time, we are looking for more questions for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. And again, anybody who has a question of good taste, who wants to come in, whether or not they're a member of BARA, please do so at this time. Please call K2BAR. Well, okay, well, I did not come with a prepared topic tonight. Perhaps I should have, but I do want to reflect on one thing, and that is that some of the very common technician class, slides that we've all been using to instruct technician class hams need some updating. This element one business with the Morse code is gone, and some of the frequency assignments I think are a little different as well. So we're going to have to make some adjustments to those. And I'm driving some of my students home as we speak. So we have, but it was just something to note, if you're using some of the common, slides, make sure that you go through them and be prepared to either delete them, bypass them, or modify them as appropriate. And let's see, what else? I do have a topic I wanted to mention. Somebody gave me a tip. I'm going to drop it. I asked a question on Tower Talk, which is an internet reflector, regarding hardline connectors and their reuse. I have a quantity of LDF-450, which is roughly half-inch hardline, and also some FSJ-450, which is Andrew flexible half-inch. They use a different kind of connector, but same basic concept. And basically, the opportunity came around to buy some short jumpers, as feedstock for replacing or making connectors on longer runs. And I asked about doing that, and the answer was, yes, you can. You have to unbolt the connector shell, remove all the rubbery parts, make sure they're in good shape, and then carefully unsolder the center pins, and you can reuse them. If the metal's in good shape and the rubber gaskets are in good shape, maybe a little silicone grease, you're good to go to reuse them. Although Andrew does sell replacement parts, so that's a good thing to think about. The other thing I've had is a small hobby saw. They look like small coping saws, except they have like 60-odd teeth per inch or something, is good for trimming the coax in preparing it for the new connector. So I learned about that as well. I was kind of wondering how I was going to do that part. It seems a little tough to do with an X-Acto knife. So those are my little contributions for this evening based on something I learned this week. Any other questions, comments, or confusions for the net, please call K2BAR. Well, if there are no topics, I have one more thing I suppose that I could share. Another good experience, and want to encourage people to try something. We're often very much repeater bound here on VHF, UHF, and I had the opportunity to buy a G7, which is a Cushcraft gain antenna, and I put it up on top of my tower this week while I was on vacation, and I haven't pushed it up another 15 feet yet, but I was already making contacts in excess of 60 and 70 miles with 50 watts both ways on FM, and even less power, even just a couple of watts. And so I'm going to encourage people to listen on 5.2, especially in the summertime, and give our National Simplex Frequency a shot. It's our calling channel, and it's a lot of fun to do. I had some great QSOs over the last 2 days on 5.2, moved off to 5.35 or 5.5, I would encourage you to do so. Even a simple J-pole up in the air is ideal, for such an operation. And I think if people made some good DX contacts and found out they could sit around and have armchair contacts, you know, home-base to home-base or home-to-mobile on Simplex, they might even be inclined to get on 2-meter sideband or 6-meter sideband, et cetera. And, of course, CW and other modes. So it's just something that I encountered this week that I was very pleased about. On that note, any other questions or comments for the net? This is K2BAR.
Now that I'm back on frequency, I have a question. NS2K.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, I was wondering whether the repeater ID sounded funny. Well, it's what happens when you crypt it, you know, 2.5, 5 kilohertz. Anyway, the question was, I'm thinking about doing an experimental maritime mobile thing with an HF portable 706, whatever. And the question was on the antenna, if I were to use a whatever tuned antenna off the stern rail, which is several feet up in the air over sea level, where is the beginning of the antenna electrically? If I were to feed it at that point, let me shut this off before it drives me crazy. Thank you. If I ran a wire down to the water and provided a ground, the antenna is really from that ground point, at which point it enters the water, I assume, to the top of the antenna, and the feed point is somewhere in the middle. Let me let it drop here. Would this not cause a certain RF elevation of the radio?
Good evening.
I have to think about that. Let's see. You're mounting a, what do you call it? You're mounting the antenna on the rail. Well, that's the feed point, is it not?
Yeah, but the rail really isn't, you know, it's a long piece of metal, and I could make that the other side of the feed. But it's really not terribly massive as far as, you know, being a counterpoint is concerned.
Okay. So consider this. I would take an insulated element and come up above the stern rail, and then I would ground the stern rail into the water, into the boat's grounding system. I think that would probably be the ideal thing to do, Jim.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking about going. I picked up a couple of little zincs that were not hideously expensive, and I would configure those in such a way to maximize the surface area and so on, and provide, you know, additional ground, as it were.
Yeah, I think task one is to make sure you have something that radiates. Bye-bye. I think you have something that radiates, and I would not try to make the stern rail that element.
Well, especially where people are touching it and it's not overtly grounded as such. I'm a little reluctant, but anyway, it does make an interesting problem.
Stand by.
I'm going to check out.
Pete, did you want to go?
Yes, guys, I got to spend some time with my daughter on something that she is with her computer, so let me run to that, and I thank you very much for letting me check in as brief as it was. Next time I'll see you guys at the 10th Internet on Monday. Have a great weekend, and thank you very much. Always enjoy it, and very informative. By the way, Jim, just for your information, I have a friend who has a sailboat. His call sign is KC2QYR. He took the test the same time that I did. And he has a 706 on his sailboat, and he went through an entire thing with setting up his ground and the antenna and everything. And I'm just wondering if you need to maybe contact him for some advice.
Yeah, that might be a good way to go. You know, anyone with experience has more experience than I do, so this could be a good thing.
Well, would you like me to give you his phone number? Is that something we can do, or some other way of getting in touch?
I don't think right at this point, but I will get in touch with you, or we'll talk next time and see about phone numbers and stuff.
Well, I would. I could key him in, and the other thing is, of course, you could always reach me at KC2QIM at ARRL.net. Okay?
Yes, that works fine. NS2K.
All right, Jim, thank you. NS2K, K2PAR, Gordon, all the best. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Have fun. Have a great weekend, folks, and see you next time. KC2QIM is clear.
Okie doke. Very good. Thank you, Peter. The Simplex gig, I got to say, it's a lot of fun. So I would encourage people to try more of it. You might find yourself a budding Simplex operator. And Jim, along that same line, I would take, you know, I mean, personally, I would take a strap and at the base of the antenna, let's say on the rear rail, and like a 2-inch piece of braid, and I would just drop it in the water, drop about 6 feet of it into the water, as long as it doesn't get involved with the propeller, who cares, and be done with it. And I would integrate it as much as you can with the ground system without creating a ground loop. But that's what I would do, and then have some sort of insulated element on the rail. I assume the rail is sturdy enough to support a substantial antenna. And if it's not, you could always base load it, I suppose, just because of mechanical limitations.
Comment?
Say again?
KC2AWX. Ray, W2ODU. The Dixter's friend has a sailboat. He has a radio in there also and antennas. I would contact him because he's quite good at that.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. I'm just thinking, Jim, would you be interested in having an antenna that you didn't leave on the boat or at least mounted in the outdoors when you weren't on board, under sail, and interested in operating? Or under power, however you're doing it?
Possibly. I've got some hamsticks. I could play with hamsticks. The usual thing is people will insulate their backstay and light that up using a tuner. Because it's, you know, a nice 25, 35, you know, however big the boat is, heavy piece of stainless that's pointed in the right direction.
Well, yeah. And if you put a coil on the bottom of it, you're ready to rock and roll, buddy. How about this? Just as a thought, I mean, if you want to throw money at the problem and have the best of both worlds, you'll love this. How about either running a, you know, near the backstay, run something off of the top of a short screwdriver antenna, essentially using the screwdriver as a linear loading coil, and then jumper that off to the bottom of the backstay, and that way you'd have a tunable antenna, and no tuner, look Bob, no hands, as it were. The other approach is, if your mast is not conductive, run a line off the mast. No, you can't run a line off the mast because the sail will take it right off. Never mind. Unless you could actually keep it against the mast. If you had an insulated mast, you could keep something right smack against the mast so it would not come off. Do that and then jumper off to the backstay. That way you get a vertical with a sloping element, like an inverted V. That might be another way to go as well.
Well, it is strange. Anyway, the mast in this case is aluminum. But the base of the mast is at least ostensibly grounded primarily for lightning purposes with a heavy piece of wire that goes to the keel, which is made out of lead. So it's grounded. But it's, I don't know, 20-some-odd feet tall. And then off at, you know, whatever the angle is, 30 degrees back, there's the backstay coming off the top. and then there are various other pieces of stainless that are coming back down that are similar length, one to the bow, of course, and several other smaller, lighter ones off to the two sides of the boat. I don't know. It's a complex electrical thing, but you know, with a magic tuner, if it can be made to load at anything, you know, it might not work on all frequencies, but you know, certain frequencies it might work.
Yeah, I'm becoming quite enamored of the idea of lighting up the backstay using from the stern area, and possibly loading it with, you're going to laugh, but with a hamstick, not a hamstick, a screwdriver, and instead of putting a top hat or a whip on the top, you basically tuck in a bolt that is jumpered over to the backstay. So basically put a pigtail between the top of the screwdriver and the bottom of the backstay. I like that.
Yeah, the bottom of the backstay is bolted into fiberglass, so that's already reasonably insulated. What they usually do is there's an Australian company that makes insulators for the backstay that's structural, a breaking strength of 7, 8, 9, 10,000, whatever it is, pounds, depending upon which size you get. But it crimps into the backstay. You shorten it by a little bit and then crimp it in line on the right near the where it joins the mast itself. So now you have a clean piece of wire that's however many feet long as a more or less vertical element.
Yeah, just one question. How does one get to the top of the backstay in order to affix that?
Oh, what you'd have to do is drop the mast. You know, this is considerable yard work at this point, which is not the sort of thing that I would do until I need to have yard work done. You know, for something like $80 or so, you can buy this insulator, and then God forbid how much they'd want to cut the wire and insert this insulated section. Anyway, it is possible, and it's a pretty standard configuration for mariners who are doing say deep ocean work where they're using SSB, not the VHF.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I know I would also be interested in a plumber's delight kind of halo configuration as well, maybe for 2 meters and 6 meters. I've seen that done on sailboats as well, on the mast, but above the above where the rigging goes, is basically short the rigging on the mast, or extend the mast to have, shall we say, a signals extension support, if you will.
Well, this is even if I lit up from the bottom of the backstay, go all the way to the top of the mast, and then the mast comes down and it's grounded, this sort of, I don't know, it sort of looks like, an inverted L configuration.
Well, you have a point. Consider this, though. Why don't you take an extreme wire tuner of some sort, or even just a big-ass coil, doesn't matter, with no capacitor, who cares, and, you know, your choice of HF radios or any kind of receiver, and just try listening and see, you know, just by lengthening the thing, see if it works, because I'll tell you what, if you don't hear much in an active band, then, you know, it's probably essentially shorted and not acting like an inverted L.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I can certainly, if I have enough time this weekend, I'll give it a stab. But I only will have 1 day out there, so time is somewhat attenuated.
but I've got a couple more of the pieces. I have the clamp if I were to do the back rail, which is a nice piece of 1-inch diameter stainless tubing. It's reasonably strong, but it's going to be interesting. I was thinking about putting a tuner in the wet locker, you know, one of the waterproof ones like an SGC or one of the ICOMs. Put that as close to the water level as possible and run a short line to the wet side of the hull and call that ground. So the case of the tuner is pretty close to the ground plane, as it were, NS2K.
W2AKR repeater.
Oh, for the purpose of testing that out, and that would simplify your experimental setup time. You know, because all you do is, you know, you can take a piece of wire with an alligator clip and clip it onto the backstay and screw it onto the butterfly nut on the tuner, and you know, strap to the ground side, you're done. And if you don't transmit, well, you'd have to transmit. It's the only way to get the tuner to work. But anyway, you get the idea. If you want to borrow it, let me know. Yeah, I can put my hands right on it. It does require that you have an ICOM radio.
Oh, which tuner were you talking about?
AH4.
Oh, that's actually one of the standard ones that they do use for that purpose. And incidentally, I ran across, I was looking at the SailNet, whatever it is, one of the pages where they're talking about a new marine model that ICOM has just come out with. I think it's their 1800, but it has pre-programmed all of the standard marine frequencies, plus it's useful on all of the HF ham bands as well. License required, of course.
Yeah, both ways. Okay. Well, very cool. That's just throwing money at the situation. That's not bad, though. My guess is for your trouble, they'll resolve a few problems. And if it means you could forego the hassle of getting that insulated backstay set up and just basically tie into the bottom of the backstay where it's allegedly it's insulated now, and I think you're in good shape. That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, I have no more. Do you have any more?
Nope. I have potential direction here. This is a good thing. I thank you very much for the discussion, advice, and so on. And anyway, we will see you, we'll say, Saturday.
Yes, John and Eddie's Eagle Court of Honor is Saturday. In fact, I don't know whether Mr. Mendelson is going to attend. I have heard rumors that Joyce and George are going to attend, but I don't know that for a fact. However, I do have a letter from Dave Sumner, which I guess whoever is the highest ranking Eagle Well official can present to John, I suppose. I noticed that Dave did not send one to Eddie. I would have thought he would have, but he didn't take the bullet or, you know, take the hint. But anyway, it was very nice of him to send the one letter nonetheless. And we have letters from FCC commissioners and chairman, actually, specifically, and all sorts of nice things for both boys. So it's very nice.
Oh, sounds very good. Very good indeed. Anyway, let me sign off here, and thank you very much. W2TTT, K2BAR, aka, this is NS2K.
Okay, very good. Anybody else have anything before we close to that? W2TTT. Late check-in.
T Mobile checking in.
KB2LCA, go ahead for a question.
Boy, we have questions and late check-ins and all sorts of things here. Let me see what I can do here. I heard NO2T, KB2LCA, anybody, LCA I think has a question. Who else?
Another late check-in, KO2OK.
Okay, you guys missed an active net. 5 minutes ago we were trying to figure out how to get to 9:30, and you know, the last 25 minutes have been quite busy. Oh, Lord. All right, let's see if I can add to the check-in list. All right. So I have KO2OK, I have NO2T, and I have KB2LCA. Who else? Okay. Jerry, did you have a question as well?
No, I just have a comment. Okay.
Comment first, and then we'll go to Gary's question.
Roger, roger. Comment. I'm going up to Binghamton Saturday to pick up a collie, so I will not be at the Court of Honor. Back to the net, NO2T.
Okay. We will miss you, but happy dog show. And, you know, what do you call it? I'm glad that you're at least doing something useful and fun and getting Dory out for the weekend. That's a good thing. And hello to her if she's there. Alrighty. Can we tell Sam, Mr. Gary, over to you, W2, probably K2BAR.
Yeah, hi everyone in the group. Gary, KB2LK. Gordon, I have a question. I'm going to be hanging some 450 line, ladder line, quite high, about between 70 and 80 feet. And I hear it's a good thing to twist them every couple of feet. Now, when you twist them, it's like half or 180 degrees. But on the next 2 feet, do you twist it in the opposite direction of the first, or you keep going in the same direction?
I'm missing the essence of the question here. You're putting up 70 feet in ladder line. That's good.
Okay. They say that when you hang in ladder line, it's good to twist it because the wind, it won't spin it. So every 2 feet you twist it like 180 degrees. And then 2 feet down you twist it again, but do you twist it in the same direction as the first time? And, you know, and then you alternate the twisting. You know, they do that so that, like, when the wind takes it, it doesn't spin it.
Okay, yes, I have seen that. But I'm trying to understand how you would reverse it. That's the part that's confusing me.
Comment.
Please.
Yeah, when they're talking, when it's twisted, it's just that you have some number of twists from one end to the other, and it will take on whatever shape it's going to naturally take on. And if you have a twist every, you know, few feet, that's, I'm sure, very much more than adequate. From end to end, you don't mechanically manipulate the wire. You just, you know, at a particular spot. You just, when you hang one end, then the other end, you turn some number of times, and there are your twists.
And that's the wind jerk.
I suppose it'll help a little bit with wind, but primarily it's so that you have whatever balance coupling. You don't get into other unbalanced situations with RF.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's really meant to maintain the balance. Gary?
I don't understand. You feed it at the feed point at the antenna, and then you just twist it 180 degrees where it connects to the coax. No, are you saying just one time?
I'm saying having a twist every couple of feet is a good idea.
Okay, I understand that would be for wind, but I didn't know this was for loading or anything. But do you twist it in the opposite direction, or you keep going the same direction?
Same direction.
Okie dokie. And you're doing that for some type of coupling purposes?
NO2T.
I didn't get that.
Okay, the purpose of it is when you have, let's say, a roof or a downspout near the twin lead. If it's not twisted, you may find a little bit of unbalance because one side of the twisted open wire line is closer to the hunk of metal, the capacitive coupling. And by just kind of turning it from the base, after you hang it from the antenna, turn it a couple of times from the base so that both sides of the open wire line, you know, essentially are near, you know, the piece of metal or what have you, you tend to minimize any unbalances. However, if you're in the clear, let's say hanging between two trees with nothing metal around you, it doesn't make any difference whether you twist it or you just let it hang straight. Back to net, NRGT.
Okay, so it averages the imperfections of the transmission. Okay. Because if it's like that, it's going to be something metal, and say it's windy out, it's going to pick it up at that point. Okay, so, well, this happens to be, I think, it's going to be about 15 feet away from the pole, so, okay, very good, thank you. Okay, very fine. You guys aren't going to believe this, but I run this whole net one mobile.
Complete with the logging. I've got the little text on what the questions were. That's pretty cool. Anyway, I'm fascinated by the questions. So I'm a little confused over the conclusion here. So is twisting for wind resistance a good idea or not? And does it help with maintaining the balanced load or not? I'm hearing two very different opinions on the subject. Jim, then Jerry.
Dennis, 2K. Not that I'm the expert. Jerry's really the expert, believe me. I'm not sure that wind really makes any difference because you're using windowed ladder line, I assume. It has big cutouts every couple inches. So that greatly reduces the wind loading. You're not going to get the oscillation that you would if you had a solid ladder line. What was the name of that bridge up in the Pacific Northwest that tore itself all apart? Anyway, where it went, anyway, that looked a whole lot like solid ladder line to the wind. In any case, it's the only reason why you'd even bother, I think, is probably if you had nearby metal objects that you wanted to minimize the differential or the unbalanced loading. But I'm not sure, Gary, that you really have the gist of what someone is saying when they're saying twisting. The end of the wire is connected to, say, the antenna, and it's hanging down. And then the free end, before you stick it into the side of the building, your lightning arrestor, whatever it is, you just give it 5 or 10 turns, whatever the appropriate number is, and then connect it up. So that both through the length of it, you have some number of lazy twists. I think that's all that anybody ever would consider doing. You don't bend the wire, as it were. Anyway, back to that, NS2K.
And what's your take?
You're 100% correct, Jim. You definitely do not want to change the spacing on the ladder line along its length. You must maintain the spacing between the two wires all the way through. You don't fold it or bend it or mutilate it. You let it run straight. And then, as Jim points out, you just kind of twist it a couple of turns. But if you don't have a downspout or something like that nearby, it doesn't make a particle bit of difference. Because you got to realize the two wires are close together, and you compare that to the distance to any hunk of metal. And unless it's running right, within inches of the downspout, there'll be the same capacitive loading or, to the hunk of metal from each wire for all intents and purposes. So anytime you have a couple of foot in a piece of metal, it doesn't matter. You might as well just run it straight. Back to net, NO2T.
Okay, this guy is taking some more calls. No, I understood. Okay, very good. I got it wrong, sir. But no, I understood what you're saying. You didn't have to do anything about it, so. I don't know, maybe, it's probably like me to speak, but I'm going to be switching to the question. Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. I'm glad we were able to help. Boy, that's very good. So, depending on your viewpoint, twisting the open wire line for wind and perhaps perhaps load balancing is okay. You just don't want any sharp angles. I think we've established that, or any proximity to metal things and things like that. Okay. Any other comments for the net? We've had a good net tonight. This is great. K2BAR.
Late check in.
Yeah, late check in.
It's still KO2 okay.
Oh, I acknowledge you. Did you have a question?
Well, I've been listening with the boat issue, and I guess Jim and I can take it offline at some point. That's one comment. And the other one was, Gordon, if you were around earlier at 6 meters, whether you caught the openings to the west coast.
Alas, no, I was instructing, instructing the New Hampshire.
Okay. Just want to make sure you did acknowledge, because I thought you'd come back. But anyway, no problem. I wish everybody a good night, and I'll check out too. Have a good evening. KO2, okay.
Okay, well, why don't you talk about the boat issue? That'd be useful.
I'm actually out of time, too. Usually 10 o'clock is the witching hour. I've got other errands or chores to do. But that's why I wanted to pick it up at some other point. But I thought it was an interesting conversation. I've been listening since about 20 to 10.
It was an interesting conversation. Like all these nets, they seem to... The last 20 minutes seems to be more interesting than the first... Or the middle 20 minutes. But the first 20 is always interesting as well, once I shut up. Anyway. All right. Thank you, Bennett. I'm sorry.
Oh, not necessary. I'll just wish everybody good night, and I'll talk to you again soon. KO2, okay.
Be aware the next 2 weeks I'll be running this net probably in a similar configuration after a training session for scouts who are trying to get their ham licenses. And then 3 weeks from now, which will be, I guess, it was the 31st of the month. I will be at camp, so I don't know if I'll be able to get in and run the net. My guess is I won't, because I'll probably be at Forestburg visiting that night. It's Thursday, so we'll have to make arrangements for that week. All right, folks. Lasties for check-ins. Anybody else? K2BAR.
NRTT closing station. Have a good evening. Out.
Okay, very good. Anybody else? K2BAR. Well, the station would like to thank KC2AWX, NZ2K, NS2K, KC2QIM, N3CRT, KO2OK, NO2T, and KB2LCA for their questions, participation, and enthusiasm for the net. It's been a pleasure, and once again, we talked about IC replacements, how to do that with the cramped areas, velocity factor, TS440 going on the Fritz because with the dot problem due to the degraded epoxy, which becomes conductive, and last but not least, last two things, NS2K's marine antenna issue, and Gary's twisted open wire line, and a couple of treatments on my part to get on 2 meter FM simplex, and also to take heart, you can reuse hardline connectors. So it's been a busy night. On that note, this is K2BAR, securing station, wishing everybody a great night and encouraging everyone to operate, to support the Bergen County FM Association and their wonderful repeaters here and on 443 .100/444.100. And also a reminder that the 10-meter net's on 28-350 on Monday nights with K2ZO as your net control. And on Tuesday nights, 443.100 with KC2KIS as your net control. And on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, the regular 2-meter net with KF2ID, Ben is your net control, right here on this repeater, 146.79. And of course, the TechNet next Thursday once again. So that's it, folks. Have a great night. This is K2VAR securing station. Good night.